So can you explain the relevance of the relationship between the TRIPS CBD discussions at the WTO?
Yes, my name is Preston Hardison. I'm here as an expert and have worked on these issues for a long time. I believe that the kind of the main points of the relationship are that in the Convention on Biological Diversity, there's been a recognition of indigenous peoples' rights to prior informed consent before access can be made to traditional knowledge or associated genetic resources. That's a very important right that indigenous peoples fought for many years to have recognized. That same right was carried over into the recognition of that right was carried over into the Nagoya Protocol. There's also been an expanding recognition of the role of customary law and the need to respect indigenous peoples' customary laws when accessing traditional knowledge and associated genetic resources. So we believe that currently under the WTO, there's no requirements for proving that you have prior informed consent. And there's no disclosure requirement. So we believe that those are extremely important safeguards for indigenous people's rights, and we hope to see those implemented in future versions of the TRIPS agreement.
How do you think, how large is biopiracy and how does it affect indigenous people?
Thank you. My name is Capa Conde. I am Aymara from Bolivia and representing here the Centro de Estudios Multidisciplinarios Aymara. The biopiracy in there are two contexts, right? The first one is that many of the biodiversity is in developing countries, and it's not a coincidence that within these countries which are rich in diversity biology, there are the presence of indigenous people. It was said that if we take a map of where the indigenous people are located and where the biodiversity is, they are in the same places. It is pretty large in terms of when the researchers want to access to the genetic resources, the easy way and the low cost is through the traditional knowledge. I mean, it's pretty efficient that the information that indigenous people have gathered through time immemorial to make this the research easier for developing new drugs, new medicine, developing seeds, and etc. How does this affect indigenous people? It affects in different levels. I think the most sensitive level is that this traditional knowledge is part of our identity. This is part of what we are. And when we see that it is taken away from us, from our control, it definitely has a cultural effect that no compensation, no ABS system will really heal that this kind of effect in the culture. In the other hand, I mean, there's a clearly economical effect that it's an unfair enrichment. And finally, I just would like to highlight that the research that is taking place in the indigenous territories is becoming more and more violent. I mean, one month ago, a Canadian citizen killed a shaman in Peru just because she was protecting her knowledge. So this type of cases we start seeing in the region. Thank you.
So what do you think the participation of indigenous peoples is important in the WTO IP discussions?
I'm Jennifer Corpus from the Kankanaali people in the northern part of the Philippines. At this meeting, I'm representing TEBTEBA, which is the Indigenous Peoples International Center for Policy Research and Education. I heard a speaker, very respected Indigenous speaker earlier in the conference say that for Indigenous peoples, there should be nothing about us without us. So it's important for us to be able to participate in the WTO IEP discussions, because of a lot of what they are discussing are traditional knowledge of Indigenous peoples that are being misappropriated and intellectual property rights are being claimed over these traditional knowledge and genetic resources. If Indigenous peoples don't participate in the discussions, the discussion would be about consent from the states when traditional knowledge from countries are used in IP applications. If Indigenous peoples participate, then the states would be become aware that it's also important for Indigenous peoples to be able to participate in negotiations, to be able to consent, to be able to come up with mutually agreed terms, and to be able to have benefit sharing for traditional knowledge that is a subject of the TRIPS, applications under the TRIPS. That's it. Thank you.
How would a mandatory disclosure requirement be helpful, and what would you like from it?
Kia ora, I'm Aro Hamid. I'm from the Ngāti Awa and Ngāti Pro tribes from Aotearoa, New Zealand, and I've been following intellectual property discussions relating to Indigenous peoples for since the early days of the drafting of the Declaration on the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. I mean, there are two principles here, mandatory disclosure, but also prior informed consent, that are very important for Indigenous peoples because they are triggers that show that there is a conversation happening between a researcher and an Indigenous community before it gets to that point of a patent being issued, when it's too late. So the idea of having mandatory disclosure is that it will give incentives to researchers to start negotiations with Indigenous peoples at an early stage in their research, to try and come to agreed terms on what both parties might want from the research, and to make it an improved practice, because what we're trying to do is change the very nature of the way that research involving Indigenous resources and traditional knowledge is being used, that we don't want a continuation of just outsiders coming in, basically prospecting knowledge and leaving. We're wanting to see something that's more mutually beneficial, where there are benefits that come back to the communities directly. And mandatory disclosure, but together with prior informed consent, is extremely important towards that goal.
Thank you.